Hello, everyone, and welcome to Celebrating Cinema, a podcast for the love of cinema. I'm your host, Laura Romans, and while I have your attention, it would be great if you could leave us a review. It really helps other film lovers find us. Our next film club screening will be on October 16th, where we're visiting Luca Guadagnino's Challengers, a feverish game of love, power, and tennis, to coincide with our upcoming episode on Desire and the films of Luca Guadagnino. You can find the link in the show notes. Today, Elliot sits down with Dutch filmmaker Sven Bresser to discuss his debut feature, Rietland. It's the story of Johan, a reed cutter in a remote Dutch farmland, who discovers the body of a young girl on his land and begins a haunting search for the truth. This brilliant first feature film has made waves as the first Dutch film selected for Cannes in nearly 30 years, and it's the Netherlands official, submission for the Oscars. Here's Elliot with Sven.
Hi, Sven. Welcome to Celebrating Cinema. How are you doing?
Good to be here. And yeah, I'm curious.
We're talking to you on the week of the release of Rietland. I mean, it must be probably a bit nervous, excitement as well at the same time.
Definitely. Curious what the Dutch audience also is going to think of the film. I don't know if I can really see that immediately.
Yeah. You
know, that, and if there's like one reaction, that's of course impossible. But I'm curious. See the reactions of some people in the theaters and doing some Q&As also in the whole of the Netherlands, actually. So,
And we'll talk about it a bit later, but I can imagine it's probably quite a strange experience for yourself as a Dutch filmmaker. I imagine filmmakers who make films in their own native language perhaps can expect it to be welcomed within their audience, but I think perhaps the Netherlands have a harder time of accepting Dutch films.
Yeah. Statistically, it's quite, I think, already... Sometimes it's very difficult to get Dutch people to Dutch films. So this is this is my first experience within that.
Before we get into the film, we always like to ask our guests their first sort of formative memory of cinema, perhaps. A film that shaped you or inspired you in some way.
So my journey to cinema, like how I got to be a filmmaker, wasn't through like one film and that I fell in love, that I was already a cinephile when I was 8 years old. That I would have liked this story, but it wasn't like this. But I had some important moments where I saw some films that I never saw before. And this was one week when I was 16 years old. And in the same week, I saw a weird documentary about Charles Manson, the serial killer.
Yeah.
I saw Elephant by Gus Van Sant, and I saw Ciudad de Deus, the City of God film. And I think this was quite an important moment. But it wasn't like after this that I knew, okay, I wanted to be a filmmaker. But yeah. I just saw suddenly, especially with the film Elephant, that there was a world in cinema out there that I really didn't know. And also felt that it was made by... humans, his film, instead of like, I don't know how the other films...
Like a machine.
Yeah, exactly. This was definitely an important moment. And I still, this film is, I can go back to it once in a while. And also how it deals with violence and the mundanity of violence, I think actually... relates to the film I made here. Not in a direct way, like we never watched Elephant as an inspiration or that stuff, but it's a film that I still carry with me, I think.
Yeah. I think it's interesting you mentioned both Elephant and City of God.
Yeah.
Because they're also both films about how the environment creates violence, which I think definitely creeps into this film.
Exactly, yeah, definitely.
For sure.
Yeah.
As you say, you didn't take a sort of a traditional sort of falling in love with film, but what was it about cinema that eventually wanted to become a filmmaker and tell stories?
I think this decision of trying to become a filmmaker didn't start with the love of cinema. This started to grow later, unfortunately, maybe. I hoped that I had this romantic story that I really fell in love with it. And from there, this filmmaking ambition grew. But it was first just recognizing that I was very bad already since a young age in concentrating and recognizing that I maybe couldn't do a theoretical study, that this was not the path for me. And I was just thinking about, okay, what can I do in life?
Yeah.
And I also recognized that I can only concentrate on something when I really wanted, wanted to exist.
Yeah.
Or so I thought it should be maybe something where life and work is not so a distinction, where it's more of the same thing. Then I had some figures around me. I didn't know them very closely, but people who lived in the village next to me that were busy with film and theater. And I looked up to these persons, and I felt attracted to their autonomy and their freedom. And they had found something that you don't... that you don't have to be intellectual for, or you have to, for me, this, I had this kind of thought, you have to, this is detached from a theoretical study.
Yeah.
And this was very much simple thoughts that I was dealing with when I was young. Like, I cannot do this. Maybe I'm just going to work in a bar or in a restaurant. But then I was like, I don't know if I can manage that also with my concentration problem, maybe. And from there, I applied to some film schools, got denied to the Film Academy, but went on doing the HKU. And from this process, really, the love for cinema slowly grew here.
Although you talk about not having the concentration for theoretical studies or other jobs, you still need to concentrate a lot in filmmaking. Yeah. And there's clearly then something that's drawn you to it. Yeah, what is that, do you think?
Like, now I have... maybe nice rational thoughts about this, but I never had this, but maybe just some control over your imagination, like seeing something and feeling that it's right in a way, right in a poetic way or in a visual way, not always in a like a rational way, and trying to convince yourself that it fits together, this imagination, this collection of images and sounds, and you can only know if it works by realizing it.
Yeah.
So I think this is something that I also had when I was a child with like building stuff or building like boats or thinking of something and seeing it and trying to make it come to life. Yeah. More than like really trying to tell a specific message or a story. Of course, it generates a story. The minute there comes a story out of it, but not so, I cannot give specific words to the story itself from the beginning on. Yeah,
you like more the process of it and finding the meaning at the end of the process, perhaps, or
not only at the end of the process, but finding a story inside of an image or inside of a tone. See how the medium of cinema can generate a story, or
how it shapes what you originally had in your head into a different way, or adds meaning or more insights than you.
Exactly. Yeah.
With Rigland, before we get into the film itself, I find it interesting that looking at your previous short films that you made, they were all based in other countries other than the Netherlands, from where you're from. What then drew you to make a film about not only the Netherlands, but from what I understand, you grew up in the Rigland sort of countryside, or these landscapes, they were part of your childhood. And from what I also understand, your mother photographs and films a lot of these landscapes, and how that not only seeped into your work, but why from the start you thought now you wanted to return back home, let's say, within film.
Yeah, I really felt this this urge very strongly that I wanted to make my first debut film in the country I was born. I actually felt, if I cannot make a film within my own country, then I maybe just has to stop it. I don't know why. This is maybe a stupid thought, but I recognized it in myself that I don't want to put the camera in this country where I was from. And I see it also in the generation of filmmakers a lot, that people go outside of our nation and they don't feel so attractive to put our visual tools in this place. So my urge was big to do this. From there, for me, it was a very logical choice to do it in a specific landscape that I knew since I was young, but it was a landscape that isn't existing anymore in the place where I grew up. I was born in a small village surrounded by reed beds, but the reed harvest died out there in the early 2000s due to different socio-economical circumstances. And when the reed is not cut, the trees will take over. So nature reserve companies will make different plans for this kind of landscape. So the landscape changed, but it's still very ingrained into my memory, also due to the photographical work my mom made in this landscape in the 90s. Yeah, and from these experiences and thoughts, some things started to grow, and I started to search for the same kind of landscape, and I found it up north in Holland in the Kop van Overijssel. Yeah.
And I say this as totally a compliment, that it is, it feels a very Dutch film in all the right ways. I mean, I know when Dutch people say it, it's often a criticism or it falls into certain cliches, but again, we'll get into that a bit later. But what is the story of this film, of Rietland?
I think in the film we follow a man whose existence and daily life is very much connected to the nature he works in, and this relation gets disrupted by him finding a body of a murdered and a raped girl on his land, and he gets alienated from his daily life and from his surroundings and starts looking for answers. It's a film about a man, nature and evil, and I think with the film we try to explore the connection between those three things. Yeah.
To bring back the mention of City of God and Elephant, I was talking about how the environment creates evil or creates violence, and I think you feel this in this film. I think not only are you trying to, there's sort of a global aspect, right, of this farmer's work, let's say, or reed cutter is being modernized or globalized from China, for instance. But then how we see that as perhaps a violence from outside, they also direct the blame of who could have raped and murdered this girl from outside of the village. But I think what the film does really well and subtly is it creates its own darkness by following Johan on his own journey for the truth. But then we start to see that there's perhaps more evil from within the place that he's looking for answers.
Yeah, this is a reading that comes very closely to how we thought of the first images and ideas. I think they were all charged with this question of, is evil coming from outside or from within? And not as a question that you want an answer on, but more as a complexity of this question itself, you know? So you see it, like you say, you see it on a global level where they feel threatened by a global economy that destroys their way of living through the Chinese import. You see it on a local level where there's also already socio-economical tensions between these different villages, but these tensions get amplified by this violent act that happens. And they point their finger towards, they project this perpetration shit towards a village that is not their own. And but then this question of is evil coming from outside or from within is mostly felt, I think, through the character itself. Like you said, he's being confronted with evil in the world outside himself, but maybe it also exposes things in himself that he wasn't aware of. So it's in all these different layers, and I think it's part of the film.
And I think what's interesting is also that the girl who's murdered and raped, we never find out who does it, who's the perpetrator of this violence. And that's quite common with a lot of murders that we don't ever actually find out. But I think what it also does is, and not only does she become a metaphor for all the things that we've discussed, it gets us to think about what could cause this? What could lead people to do it? So rather than putting all the blame on one individual for causing it, you have to then ask within yourself, why is this happening within the environment? Like I said, as I was mentioning before about how it really captures Dutch culture, I think, really well. So obviously there's a great referencing or inspiration taken from the Dutch masters or paintings. I think you see that very clearly. But I think in a very sort of authentic and honest way. I don't think you're trying to imitate it, or it's very, I've always said since moving to the Netherlands, I only now, because I see the landscapes in which we're in, do I appreciate what they were painting, because it's their everyday life. And I think you see that beautifully in this landscape. But what I also read was you also based it around the philosophy of someone called Armando, who talks about how landscapes are guilty or contain this guiltiness within it. Could you perhaps expand on that?
Yes, definitely. So in this period when I was searching for this same kind of landscape that was in my memory. I also got to know the work of Armando better. I knew him as a mythical figure, and maybe I saw his work when I was younger, but I always got very sick of this kind of work. I didn't like it, I think. But then I saw it again in this period, and it attracted me a lot. Also, how he talks about it in a very non-intellectual way, in a very simple but poetic way.
Yeah.
And his notion of a guilty landscape tries to describe nature's indifference for human suffering. He grew up in World War II and was surrounded by places where there were big executions of people, and he just couldn't figure out how nature just kept on going while this violent acts were happening there. I mean, I sometimes get these questions like, our landscape, of course landscapes are not guilty, you know, it's just a human projection.
Yeah.
And this is also what helped me in the process of having a different lens to look at this landscape that I already know my whole life.
Yeah.
It just gives you a poetic observation on this vegetation that you know for a very long time. And from there, the violence seeped more into the images that I already had, and a story grew from there. Yeah.
And could you talk about, because for me, the landscape is quite obviously a character, but how you bring that character to life, at least in my opinion, is through the sound design. It's very clear that there's not a lot of dialogue that takes place. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, more dialogue takes place within inside places rather than outside. And when we are outside, we tend to hear more of just the landscape talking through wind, through reeds, through this kind of thing. But it creates this feeling of it's always there and it's living and breathing in a way that, yeah, only heightens what you're trying to do.
Yeah, so what was your question? Sorry.
How you were thinking about using the sounds of these landscapes to illustrate this, or to create bring the landscape itself to life as a character?
Already from my first, like from my youth, but also from my first time visiting this rural area, I noticed, some beautiful sounds in the landscape that you immediately wanted to record, but you sometimes cannot record it. It's very difficult. It's a film about this specific landscape and the complex inner landscape of this man. And I think the connection between those two things, I think they're not really separated. They become maybe also one thing. And their connection is, you can really manipulate it, I think, in a beautiful way with sound. This is the same thing for how we construct the whole film, like, or we constantly trying to find the balance, like what's inside the frame and what's outside the frame. You know, you make things visible, but you also create things that are invisible.
Yeah.
And sound is a very powerful tool in doing this, especially if dealing with subjects like the fear of the unknown, where a lot of the film is surrounding about this subject. And I think sound is very essential in that search. Yeah.
When you mentioned there the what's inside the frame and what's outside the frame, it's also clear how the camera decides at times. It's never following just the character or just the landscape. It sometimes chooses of what we as an audience can see or not see. So often action takes place outside of the screen. Again, probably alludes to what you're saying already, but perhaps could you talk about what you were thinking perhaps in this moment of the viewer's experience of what you're allowing them to see and what you're not allowing them to see and why this is?
While imagining or designing or creating these shots, we're not thinking a lot about the viewer, I think.
Mm.
We're really thinking about what works for us. But of course, we constantly feel ourselves this tension that you want to see what's hidden by what we see, you know?
Yeah.
I think this is something Marguerite, I think, has some very profound words on that I don't have, but this is the tension of painting and photography and a lot of visual art. But I think it's even way more bigger in cinema itself, is that you want to see what's hidden by what you see in the frame, you know? Yeah, this is an aspect where we every day, if it's constructing the image together with my cinematographer, offset, but also onset, we are consciously and unconsciously busy with that tension. Yeah.
It's funny that you say you don't think of the viewer, but yet how it still translates to the viewer experience. I guess how we always want to know everything, or we want to see everything, we want access to all the information at once.
Yeah.
But that's also not real life, or that's also not how, yeah, the truth. We never know the whole story of anything.
No, and sometimes you have to take things away to see more clearly, I think, also, you know, to really focus on something that is complex, you have to strip things away. You have to make things simple. This is also one of the choices that we really wanted to shoot in a specific place and approach this community as almost like a nation, you know? And we shoot the film within the borders of this nation and community that has an own flag, their own songs, their own rituals, like this microcosm that is also controlled by global forces that they don't have control over themselves, and that's why they feel threatened. But this limited space was, I think, very important for us to explore this complex way of living and teams. Yeah,
I think again, control is a key word you use there, because I think it's something we all feel in our own lives, but I think particularly in perhaps more rural settings where the traditions that we once had are no longer our means of survival, but also our own identity that's being eroded, and we're being confronted with that, or people from the countryside are being confronted with that. And I think that couldn't be shown better, or for as beautiful the film is to look at, to listen to, so much is dependent on Johan, I think, and Khaled Kanoba, who plays him, who's actually a non-actor, who's a real-life reed cutter. Could you talk about not only your decision to cast a non-actor, but how you found him? And I think it's very difficult to direct non-actors to begin with anyway, but so much of the film is based on not speaking, and he has to then be able to translate not only what you're looking for, but both, like you said, the darkness and the innocence at the same time within himself.
Yeah, these were things that I also questioned myself when I was imagining the story, and there are lots of reasons why I choose to work with a community of people that never acted in the film before. The first choice was because I wanted to explore this landscape, these rituals connected to this landscape in an honest way. For me, was through doing it with people who already lived there for generations, and you see on their hands and their faces that they work every day within these elements, you know? I mean, your face just changes when you work every day in the sun and in the wind. But also other things, like you say, dealing with guilt and innocence, and how do you play these very complex things, you know? And in my imagination, when I saw a professional actor trying to deal with these themes, try to handle these themes, it looked very phony and not good. This is not saying that it is. I think other directors and actors could maybe do a very interesting job in it. But just for me, I was looking for more an unconscious presence of somebody who embodied this contradiction or this inner conflict. And, trying to play guilty is quite easy, I think, or easy. I mean, people can do this, but trying to play innocence in a complex way, I think, is very hard if you're conscious of what you're doing the whole time. So this was this moral ambiguity that we try to explore. I tried to find somebody who embodied this for me. And for me, Gerrit had this. He had a lot of contradiction and contrast in himself from the first times I met him. I felt it. The first time I met him was on one of these meetings that you see also in the film, and he was silent for 1.5 hours while sitting on a table with only 8 men who were very discussing, very passionate and loud, but he was silent for a long time. And then a week later I met him, and he was very open and very almost childlike adventures, or open in a way. It's hard to explain, but there was a big contradiction already. He had something very hard and tough, but also something very gentle, and an openness that you maybe don't see literally in the film, but I think is very much in the character itself. Yeah, so this was some experience. So this is not the first time I worked with non-actors almost in all my films I do. Most of the times it just comes also out of the necessity of the film or out of what the film needs.
Yeah.
But it's also maybe, I have the feeling that cinema has this unique power to look at things and people. And I find it sometimes hard to really see an actor, maybe because they are so good in acting they can hide themselves. So that's why most of the time I move towards people that are non-professional actors. But I'm sure I will.
Yeah,
I want to work with a professional actor, but then I will be always, I think, attracted by their personality, by what they show when they're not acting.
Yeah,
this is also sometimes I look people up where I maybe want to work, but I always look up just normal interviews or conversation, not like work that they did. So this maybe just shows a bit how I try to work with these people.
You can definitely feel the honesty of the world that you built within the film, and I think that's probably because of the non-actors that you have in it. We're speaking in English, obviously, and this is obviously to attract an international audience and a Dutch audience. But for an international audience, could you perhaps talk about that? I think what's maybe missed in an international audience watching this is actually the political undertones of just how divided farmers are from the rest of the country. Like you were explaining earlier, you wanted to set it within this own nation, this own country. And I imagine you're referring to like this farmer area. And we have the elections coming up at a time where the farmers also have their own political party. I'm sure these are all things you were thinking about. And I think it felt to me as much of not only, I don't want to say a voice for them, but you get to see their lives play out and you, as a viewer, perhaps develop more understanding and recognize the challenges they're confronted with because of modernization, globalization, etc. I felt it more of a bridge rather than like not only seeking sympathy or something, let's say. And I wondered if you could speak about that and obviously with the elections coming up, how you think this film is situated within and around all the politics that are happening in the Netherlands.
That is a hard question to me because it's, I think, maybe a lot of questions. But for me, the film is definitely a witness of the world we're living in. Like you say, it's very specific and local in the place, but you have exactly the same problems in different forms in Argentina and Brazil, in India. You have massive farmer protests in India going on. Like, you can find it everywhere in the south of France. It's just a community that loses control on the way how they used to live, and they feel threatened by this, and they try to find answers on this problem, and these answers are not as easily as politicians try to give them, you know, or try to feed them. Yeah, and maybe this meeting in the scene. Quite a good exposition of what sometimes can happen. You know, it starts with hatred towards this elusive stranger at the other side of the world, the Chinese, who are threatening their way of life. Afterwards, they come into a discussion of called bureaucracy, and where it's more of a conquer and divide situation, where the government officials name the other village that they are already feeling right about the choice they are made. And yeah, they divide the two villages within this meeting, and the hatred, the real hatred, ends to this stranger that is on the other side of the lake, you know? And this is, in the film, it's an anonymous stranger. We never see them. So I really hope it's also a canvas for everybody who sees the film to connect it to their own reality, you know? This the truthers that we're talking about, these other villages, it was also inspired maybe about on this murder case of Marianne Vaastra, where a murder was blamed on an asylum-seeking center next to a village. But in this murder case, 13 years later, a farmer from the village itself, due to the DNA connection, was caught. But still after that, people were convinced like this cruelty, this horrendous murder could not have been done by people from the inside. But I really try to, this fear for the unknown, to approach it as a human thing.
Yeah.
And try to get the political context a bit out of it. Also because I may be aware of what kind of people will see my film in the cinemas. It's also a lot of people who distance themselves from this asylum seeking center problems, and they think they're not part of this problem. So I think we try to approach it more as a human condition, the fear for the unknown, instead of only a condition that happens on the countryside of Holland.
I think you do it very well. Why do you think, because obviously this film got selected for Cannes and you've been traveling the world a bit with premiering this film, why do you think it's resonated so well internationally as well, where other Dutch films have perhaps failed or not succeeded in bridging into international audiences?
The honest answer is I don't know totally. It's all speculations. I think we were talking about how specific it is. I think just making something that's so specific, people that are talking in their own dialect, that witnessing rituals that are being repeated for generations in this specific place, I think will always help you to transcend the place where you shot it.
Yeah.
This is maybe a cliche, you know, but how more specific thing is, how more it can resonate with the whole world. So I think this helps. And maybe it also helps with that we use the form of cinema to generate and talk about these things.
Yeah.
I think the form of cinema is not bounded to a nation or a language or cultures. It can really travel beyond all these borders and concepts of places, I think. And if maybe this helps, I hope this helps.
Yeah.
That if you really try to express yourself through image, through the frame, through sound, generate the story from within there, I think it helps to resonate the story far beyond where we made it. Yeah.
Definitely. Do you hope that this perhaps can open and encourage other Dutch filmmakers to not only be able to bridge that gap also internationally, but as I was saying before, there's kind of almost like this shame within the country itself of embracing its culture, of never thinking it's good enough for it to be worth considering to explore. But perhaps this film does show it is not only fascinating to interrogate, but necessary and urgent. Is that something you've come to realize through making this film, or something you knew already?
That it was an important thing.
More just how you sort of very openly embrace Dutch culture in every aspect of making this film, not only the story itself, but the methods through which you use it. And like you said, it's very personal or very specific to a place within the Netherlands itself.
Yeah.
And I think other Dutch film, there is more a stereotype of not wanting to embrace itself because it finds it, I don't know, there's something to it that they find shameful or not good enough for.
Yeah.
International audiences, maybe.
No, for me, this was from the very start essential in this process of making this film, to look at routines, at the everyday life, but also at the everyday violence that you see around us. You know, political violence and perversity, but also on a more small scale, violence that you see. Yeah, but also just looking at Dutch landscapes in a cinematic and honest way. I'm not the first one to do it. I mean, we have a very big tradition of people that we also watch while preparing for this film, you know, like how Joris Evens, Herman van der Horst, but also Bert Haanstra, how they filmed the Dutch landscape. These people were famous in this time, how they worked within the elements, how they captured wind, you know, and I was always a bit surprised that this tradition of filmmaker never seep into the fiction world of a later generation. Most of countries in Portugal or Italy, even France, you see that these post-war documentary traditions in some generation got part of the fiction filmmaking. And I sometimes wonder why this didn't happen in Holland. And this is what I really try to communicate with my crew and with the people that I watch my film. It's like a scene in Bert Haanstra's film De Stem van het Water, and in the beginning of the film you have a scene that is shot in my native village, or small fisher's village of 50 houses, and you see him in dawn checking his fishing nets, and you just see a very simple ritual that has been repeated for generations, but shot in a way that you didn't see that much in in other fiction films, and I think I showed this kind of material to my DOP and to other people in the crew, and just showed them that it can be very simple, but that we just have to have the patience to be in the right conditions, weather, but also other elements that have to be right to shoot these things, and that all was a big inspiration. Yeah,
and we always like to finish podcast by asking a question. It's maybe a big question, but I think important to ask these days. But what are your hopes for the future, perhaps within your own filmmaking or for the Dutch film industry?
For myself, I just hope that I can get some money to make a new film and explore my perspective on things. And I don't want to be busy with like an audience too much, or like if it is a festival audience or like a mainstream audience. I hope I can just focus on the exploration of my own vision of things, and hope we get support for that. In terms of a more global perspective on that, I hope people get the chance to take risks and to develop their way of making film through the medium itself, and that people have the space to not only work within like the storytelling industry that has been forced on us for a long time, but that people feel the freedom to use the frame and the sound as a way to express themselves.
I hope you continue to receive money to make films. I hope you continue to make Dutch-specific films like this. And I hope this film also gives other filmmakers the confidence to do so as well. But thank you, Stijn. It was great talking to you.
Thanks a lot, Elliot. Thanks.
You can book your tickets to Rietland, now screening at Lab 111. The link is in the show notes. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Write to us and let us know if Rietland struck you as deeply as it did us.
Do you love what we do? Support us by leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform. It really helps us climb the ranks of the podcast charts. This was a Lab 111 production, edited and produced by Elliot Bloom, with music from Hugo Emmertzahl and artwork from Studio FFF.